Season 2, Episode 6, and back out of my lovely warm studio. Well, I'm actually still in it, and we're going, zooming up the motorway up to Dublin, but it's okay, it's on Zoom, it's fine, I'm not actually physically doing it. But my guest this week is from a Cork band, so we really, really feel at home. Now, these guys have literally been knocking it out of the park the last couple of years. I was lucky enough, I got to see them twice this year, once in the City Hall with the Cork Youth Orchestra, and the second time then was opening for the Coronas in Live at the Marquee, a day when one of the songs that we're going to chat about later went to number one. You can't get much better than that. Of course, who am I talking about? I'm delighted to be joined from True Tides, Cian McSweeney. Cian, how you doing, bud?
Cheers, thanks so much for having me. I'm doing great, thank you.
Yeah, finally, we finally got to do this, because it must be about, Jeannie Mack, a year and a half ago when we initiated contact, and then for personal reasons, I wasn't doing the podcast, and then you guys were busy releasing music and playing to loads of people all around the country and elsewhere, and now here we are. Finally, at long last.
Delighted. It is fantastic. Thank you so much for having me on the podcast. This is a joy.
The joy is all mine too, Cian. How have you been? You have been a busy guy. You're only just back from the States.
Yeah, I think I'm still on US time. I feel like it's been a whirlwind, but a fantastic one at that. But so apologies if I'm a little bit scatty today.
That's okay. You were over with the Coronas. You were playing sax and singing and doing loads with them on their tour in North America?
Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, I've been fortunate enough to, Danny is a good mate of mine now, but he was a huge supporter of True Tides from very early on. And I guess we ended up writing together. So I've co-written a lot of songs with him now for the album True Love Waits, and then for the most recent one, Time Stopped as well. So
it's a beautiful album, by the way. So kudos to you, pal.
Thank you. And I'm sure Danny's a genius. He's a songwriting machine, that guy. So it's just a joy to be in a room with him and work with him, and we get on great. And then when they were saying, sure, we're off on tour, and Danny was like, you'll come along for a bit. We've got a tour bus. And I was just like, this is a childhood dream. So I managed to get away for just over a week with them, and I had the time of my life.
I have to say, right, because I love on Instagram, I love stories and I love following stuff, and I've been following their tour quite literally on the stories, because in fairness to them now, everything is up. But one of the funniest moments, and it involves you, and I was laughing to myself, it's some video of you backstage, and then suddenly you start dancing, and it's like, lads, there's not enough dancing on this tour.
Yeah, I'm kind of cross the Cork back to bring the crack along with them, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, anyway, Cian, I invited you to come onto the podcast to chat about the four songs that you've written that are most personal to you. And the first one that you've picked is Higher. Why did you pick this one?
Well, I mean, I had to pick it because it's actually the first True Tides single. And I think when this song finally kind of came together, and the sound of it as well, not just the writing of it, the production of it, we realised this is who we wanted to be, because myself and Connor and Owen were in a different band as well with another brother, Cullen, before True Tides really kind of became what it is. And Higher was one of those kind of pivotal moments where we were like, oh, this is who we are as people, and the sound of it, you know. And for me personally, lyrically, it's kind of, it was really cutting through and saying more what I wanted to say, you know.
And what is the subject content of the song?
Well, I mean, it's the music itself is very uplifting. It's high BPM, high tempo. It makes you want to dance. It sounds like something you're going to hear at a festival. And that's the kind of energy we love to bring on stage live as people, as brothers. And I always like to kind of maybe sneak in darker elements in under the pop sheen of that stuff, and maybe try to say something a bit deeper if possible, so that, you know, people can dig into the lyrics more if they want and find something in there, or, you know, they can just hear higher, higher, and, you know, and feel that joy that you feel live. But it's really at its core, it's a song about kind of in ways about addiction, or in ways about that the torment of that, or the torment of trying to find out who you are and not knowing what that is. And I think, I mean, you know, everybody kind of goes through that in their lives at various points, you know, and trying to search and trying to find. And I think there's something about this song that has that tension in it. And I know the chorus says, get me higher, let me rise above. It sounds super positive, which it is and can be taken that way. But it's also, I think it's also kind of a plea. It's kind of like, oh, just get me high to avoid this pain that I'm feeling, if you look at the verse.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll have a listen to the song and then we'll come back and we'll chat some more about it. Okie dokie. So this is the first song that Cian from True Tides has picked on this week's podcast. This is the fantastic, and I'm telling you, your feet are going to be bopping, folks. This is Higher. Can't take it, pacing up and down the halls, photos making us strangers of us on the walls. Love those lines.
Thank you. Yeah. Still proud of those ones. I haven't listened to the track in so long, actually. It's nice to listen back to it and just kind of go, yeah, no, I'm still proud of that song.
And you know what I also love as well? Just before you go into that verse, the guitar. And when I heard it, I'm a massive fan of 80s music and really good 80s music. And I hear so much of all the best of 80s mashed modern in your stuff, in all of your songs. Unfortunately, you're going to hear me say this consistently throughout this. But that guitar for me has a real kind of Police feel or 80s Rush. I'm a massive Rush fan. And they went through a period in the 80s where they kind of all good bands played that guitar feel. And that's what resonated with me with it.
Oh, thank you. You know, and is my brother Owen really kind of came up, like me and him kind of came up with it together, but he was like jamming it out and he was coming up with this gold and I was like, oh my God, what if it did this? And it ended up being this weird angular kind of guitar part that's like kind of stuff that you're saying there, Police-y, and almost like a Kraftwerk kind of melody. It's so strange, you know, and it's just like, because we love all that stuff and that 80s influence you're talking about. I mean, you know, a lot of that, you know, the best of the 80s, like the stuff they were doing was so progressive and different and interesting, and I'm just trying to, you know, meld some of that stuff into our own work. I mean, it's kind of who we are, and thank you for picking up on that.
And the thing I always love about the 80s music, even though it's 40 years ago now, the production values of an awful lot of the stuff is not matched today. And when you think of the equipment that they had then versus now, and I got that too in the production value of this song, of the four songs you've picked, but of this song as I'm talking about it. And it's like, you know, okay, maybe the, you know, the way you hear people say, oh, I wrote that song in 3 minutes, and you may well have. But the finished article, a lot of thought went into every single note, every line, every piece of instrument that's played in that. Everything is just in the right place.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for noticing. We really put a lot of effort into, like, as you, like, the songs do tend to get, the best songs do tend to come together pretty quick, or at least certainly the genesis of it, the crux of the song is pretty quick. And that's usually, you can kind of trust that there's something to it in that sense, because usually that's intuition or it's kind of instinct. And I think once it's that, then you know that it's, you're not overthinking it, intellectualized too much. And I think that's what people connect to, isn't it? Gut feeling or instinct or something that, you know, comes from the heart, you know. But then when it comes to the production and making sure you get that feeling across, that it can go wrong in that area, and we're so careful to work on making it sound the way we want it to sound. And we were so fortunate as well to work with an incredible, it was our first time working with Philip McGee, this producer who's now based in Meath, but he's very close to Dublin. He's one of my best friends, and, you know, from that moment when I met him, and, you know, we work together all the time now on so many different things and True Tides, but he just really, he is the type of producer who isn't going to steamroll an artist and say, this is how you should sound. He's there to facilitate and to guide, and he was just so brilliant at that. And again, you're picking up on the 80s production there. He has a brilliant Oberheim drum machine, which is like, it's the same one that would have been used on Blue Monday by New Order and stuff. So those sounds, and it's an original machine from the 80s. So like that sound is, it's replicable, you know, and it is instantly recognizable. And yeah, we processed it a bit in slightly more modern way, but it definitely, it gives that sound. And as you say, a lot of that production from the 80s still stands today because it was so fresh and new, and they were using these instruments in different ways. Like Trevor Horn was one of his production. It's just like, what is that? How did they do that? You know, you put it on now and you're like, what is this? You know, it's just incredible.
It's bizarre, actually. I'm a huge, because I mean, he was the Buggles and he was behind Frankie Goes to Hollywood. Growing up in the 70s and 80s, I was a massive fan of Yes and Rush and all that. And he actually was the John Anderson for me. What a vocalist, right? But Trevor Horn sings in one Yes album. It's in around the kind of late 70s. And the guy that used to play keyboards with him, Yes, then came to the Opera House a couple of months back, and they were playing a 50th anniversary of one of their albums, and he's now the keyboardist in Yes.
What?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. And it was like, I was sitting there going, oh my God, this is like musical.
Like, yeah.
Oh.
That's amazing. Oh my God. And I bet they sounded amazing too.
Oh. It was.
I saw New Order at Electric Picnic. When did they play? It was only a couple of years back. It was before the pandemic. But my God, they sounded like better than any modern act. They were so like loud and fresh sounding. It was like, yeah, these guys know what they're doing.
Yeah. And I was one of the youngest at that gig in the Opera House. And it was like, I remember the first and the only other time I'd ever seen Yes play was back in the early noughties. I think around 2001, 2002, and they had this Yes Symphonic Tour. So they did a full symphony orchestra with them in the Point Depot, and there was hardly anybody there, right? But it was the only stage that was big enough to hold them. But it was like, you could just close your eyes, it was like listening to a record, and you're kind of going, why is there nobody here? Like,
Yeah, it's just crazy. I don't know. Yeah, that's a tough one to answer, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Growing up yourself, what would have been your influences in music that kind of shaped you as the songwriter and the performer that you are today?
It's very vast and wide ranging. Like, again, I'd be super influenced by the music. My my father and mother would have been playing. My father was big into the Police, so you picked up on that reference there straight away. I mean, there'd be everything from the Police to Neil Young, the Eagles, so real harmonic melodic music. And then, you know, my brothers, like Owen would have been bringing Jimi Hendrix into the house, and so that wailing guitar and that incredible sound he was making, and then like heavier stuff like Smashing Pumpkins. And then like when I heard Radiohead for the first time, I was just like, oh my god, what is this? It took over my soul. I was a kid, and it just struck me as something. And I was just like, what is this? So like stuff like that. And then vocally, then like Tom York would have been huge for me, but then I heard Jeff Buckley, and I'm still to this day completely obsessed with his voice and his performance. And for me, nobody can ever top his vocal performance as a male singer. I mean, there's so many female singers that were, he was inspired by, that, you know, obviously incredible, like Nina Simone and Etta James and so many different singers like that. But for me, Jeff Buckley was a huge influence vocally. And then, yeah, musically though, it's very varied. Again, like, you know, we'd be driving around, driving to school in the morning, 96 would be on, and the best of the 80s are playing, and you're like, Tears for Fears, Everybody Wants to Rule the World. And you're like, yeah, turn it up, you know? Good music, it'll always stick around. Good songs will always stick around. You know, that's why these songs, you know, are still being played on the radio, you know, to this day. So it's a very varied taste I have, and it's always still changing for me. I've never got stuck in a genre or stuck with a band, you know. It always changes for me constantly.
Yeah. And when did you first start realize, okay, you would have grown up loving music, your mom and dad playing the Police and all these fabulous acts, but when did you then start saying, okay, I want to actually now recreate and make my own music and learn to play?
I can't remember. All I can remember is being exceedingly young and wanting to play a saxophone. Like I was probably 3 or 4 saying to my mom, I want to play a saxophone. And I don't know where the idea came into my head. Was it the Muppets, or was it was it Van Morrison, or what, you know,
Bruce Springsteen?
Springsteen, come on, Clarence Clemens, like. But, you know, so that was the first instrument I ever wanted to play. And I was probably too small to even hold it. I was probably as tall as a saxophone. So I was handed a harmonica and I started that. But music was always very encouraged in our family. My mum was very musical. So, and there was always, we were so lucky to have instruments in our house since we were kids. Like, there was a piano there, and my mum would like play away on that, and kind of, we'd be just listening to her play. Or, you know, then, as you know, my older brothers started to get guitars, they'd start playing, and then I'd eventually amble over and pick it up and try to listen to the records I liked and literally figure out how to make a chord by listening to the music. And that's kind of how I taught myself that. But then, yeah, I mean, we went to the Cork School of Music, and myself, Connor and Owen all went there at various stages and learned music theory. And, you know, I classically trained in the clarinet and then the saxophone, and Connor would have done drums in the Cork School of Music. Owen did piano briefly and gave it up because the guitar was his thing. So, you know, there was lots of music in our house constantly. And then we'd come home from school, ditch the bags in the floor, and go into what is most people's good room.
The front room.
Well, the front room, the good room, you know. It was literally like drums, guitars, pianos, and we'd come in and we'd just make loads of noise for hours on end. And I'm sure it was horrific for the neighbours, but we had very forgiving neighbours, apparently.
That's the one thing that I wanted to ask you about, because not only is it you and your two brothers in the band, right, but I jokingly called you the Von Trapp family, because other members of your family are also brilliant at music. And your sisters, they went touring with you during the summer and they'd done backing vocals at some of the gigs. Brilliant to have such parents that encouraged you to learn the different instruments. But my God, it must have been noisy in the process of learning.
Oh yeah, big time.
Like the saxophone, doing the scales in the saxophone ain't easy.
Oh my God. Yeah, well, it wasn't easy for me either, I'll tell you. An inattentive kid who has very little patience, but I hated practicing. But what I loved was just figuring out songs. I loved songs. I loved, you know, that. That's what excited me. So while the course healing music was incredible for teaching me fundamentals that are still stick with me today, I guess, like, it, and I love classical music, but it wasn't why I wanted to play the saxophone. That did put me off for a while, but I guess kind of doing songs that I wanted to do, so then you just persevere then, you know, because it's what you love, you know. And as you say, we had parents who gave us every opportunity we were very fortunate, you know, to actually, you know, instruments aren't cheap and we were so lucky to have them and be encouraged to play. And
isn't it paying off?
Nine in the family, so like that's a lot of noise. And I'm the middle child, you wouldn't tell. Listen to me. But yeah, no, I mean, I think I always felt the need to express myself. And I guess as a kid in a big family, you can be drowned out sometimes. So, and I'd have been quite an introverted kid as well. So I think music was an amazing escape for me, an amazing way to kind of process my thoughts or my feelings. And it kind of became just everything to me, really.
When you play music and when you're on stage, is it the place that you feel most comfortable in the world, Cian?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, it's where I feel so comfortable. It's just performing. It's that energy, that transfer of energy between you and a crowd is such a magic, special thing. And it's not a kind of a, for me anyway, certainly it's not about, look at me, everybody, I'm, you know, on the stage. It really genuinely is just for the love of that connection with people. And, you know yourself, like, I mean, and I know myself as a fan of music and going to see my favorite bands, that feeling when you connect with an artist and their music that you love and they're there in the room with you playing, and whether it's joyous music or whether it's, you know, quiet, you know, introspective or melancholy, once there's that genuine connection between the artist and the audience, that magic, it's like you can't bottle that. You know what I mean? No streaming company can own that. I mean, yes, you know, but they do, don't they? But no, that live experience, you know, that's special, and you know, it's addictive.
Yeah, yeah, it is one of the most amazing feelings ever, definitely. Just touching back on the song Higher, and it's a foot tapper. All your songs, I have to say, when I hear your music, it immediately brings a smile to my face. But as you said, you're also tackling, there's a darker side to the song. And even in the opening lines, I can shake it like a siren call, chasing around my dreams like an animal. It's electric, but I'm wasting time deep inside my heart like a parasite.
Yeah, no, so I mean, I guess I'm drawing from personal experience and then, you know, and also like just kind of imagining this world or this character or this person who's just chasing something. There's a hole in their somewhere and they just can't fill it. And that kind of high, I suppose, that you can get from it. I mean, people have vices, people, you know, even devices like phones and things like that. You know, sometimes rather than face what's causing us anxiety, we'll chase something to remove it. But that's kind of a fruitless act. It's kind of like trying to fill a hole that can't be filled. And I think that's kind of that feeling, you know, deep inside my heart, like a parasite. I know that's a dark word, but that's how it could feel, I think. And I guess then what the chorus is saying is, get me higher, let me rise above this. For me, it's kind of, it's got a double meaning there. One part is kind of saying, give me the high so I don't feel this, and the other part is, please get me higher and let me
rise above it. Yeah, I picked that up as well. There is, I love the double meanings in it.
That's what I that's my favourite thing in lyrics.
Writing one thing meaning another.
Exactly. But also like that's what I'm at with it, but at the same time, you know, I feel funny explaining lyrics too deeply, because people can take what they want from it too, and that is still valid, even if this is my take on what I wrote. It's not my song anymore, airy phrase that sounds.
But it's not, I guess. Listen, it's your song to a point until you release it, and then it's everybody else's. Yeah, and that's the beauty of music, because you have your reasoning and your meaning behind it when you wrote it. But if I listen to it and I get a completely different meaning from it, that's what music's about. It's all about a feeling and a meaning. I guess it's different for everybody.
It's like, hopefully they'll get what it's about in a way, right? So it'll be a similar thing in their life, right? So that that I've written it well enough that it's clear enough as to what I'm talking about. But I guess it's like the analogy of, say, for example, if I said to you right now, I said, think of an apple, right? And you know, what do you see? What do you see, like a red apple or a green apple? And that's down to your personal experience. I might see a green apple. But like for you, it might be something else. It's still an apple objectively, but the color of that is up to you. So it's kind of like that with songs and lyrics for me. I think it's like, here's what I'm saying, but it's going to have a different meaning to you in your life because of your experience. And I think that's what's special about art, and that's what can make it transformative, and that's what kind of can bring people together and make them feel less alone in the world.
Okay, we're going to move on to the second song now, Cian, and the second song that you've chosen is Survive. Why did you pick this one?
Yeah, this one means a lot to me personally as well for a couple of reasons. So this song was written during the Beast from the East, I think it was 2018, pretty much put the country on lockdown.
Send more bread. Do you remember people writing on cars?
Remember, yeah. You know, and then I think, you know, so at the time I was struggling a lot myself, finding it hard to even get out of the bed or to be motivated to kind of... You know, I was really struggling with that, struggling with myself, my identity, stuff like that, mm-hmm. and how hard it can be even pursuing a career in the arts and stuff, and everybody has struggle in their lives, you know. But you know, I was just like, well, this is what I'm feeling, and this is so literally the chorus is get up, and it's again sounds like such an uplifting thing, which it is, but literally it was me saying to myself, get up
through all your fears and get up through all your nights.
Literally telling myself to get up out of the bed. I mean, how about, you know, I literally saying you can survive that, you know, it's like the, you know, what can happen. And then I kind of realized, okay. And then I was, I had my studio set up on a laptop, the one I'm talking to you now, actually back in my house. And, you know, we were all snowed in, and I started finding this piece of music, and it was kind of melancholic sounding, and I just thought, okay, well, this is what this is about then. But then as I just kind of went, again, this is not who we are though, and I know this song is about a dark period, but I still have hope, you know. I still have that hook in me that I know it's not all is not lost, and I kind of want to transfer that into the music too, you know. There is tension in the music, but there's release and there's hope. And so I switched up the music, and I with my production, I was kind of messing around with it, and suddenly almost accidentally made it into this boppy song from this really sad sounding demo. And I went, oh, I like that. You know, there's something really special about having taken sad sounding music, not just the lyric, and then spinning it into this thing that's positive. And I think that really inspired me.
I mean, from a personal point of view, that's also the key to it when you're going through a tough time like that as well, isn't it? It's about spinning it.
Yeah, you kind of have to, yeah, as best you can, and either yourself or through yourself or through enlisting, getting onto mate or whatever it is, or telling someone. And I just kind of realized, like, okay, I want to tell this through my song, and hopefully, again, you know, somebody might feel less alone, or might kind of, you know, realize, okay, he's gone through this too. Here's somebody else. But also, I wanted the music to actually lift you up, you know, like, you know, if the music is energetic and has a beat like that and a feeling like that, your body's going to move. When we move, we feel better, and that's it. It's kind of what I wanted to achieve with that. But like, I mean, literally the opening lyrics are, open up the door, step into
to the storm. Maybe you were born meant for something more.
Very, very literal. I was literally looking out into the Beast of the East going, oh yeah, that's an actual, that's what this is.
Yeah.
And that's what that challenge is. And maybe you were born meant for something more. It's that idea of hope. And I know it's, maybe you could stay drifting through your day, take the easy way, don't let it fade. It's just like, I know, and you know, that you could just give in here and keep floating, but no, you've got this, you know. And I think that's when you get into that chorus, then get up through all your fears, get up through all your nights, get up through your darkest moments, you will survive. And it's true.
And even the way when those lines are delivered, it's like, it's a collective of, you will survive. It's like, we're in this together. You're not in this alone.
100%. And when I brought it to my brothers, Connor and Owen, and we started playing it live before we even ended up producing it to put it out, immediately, like, the, you know, Connor brought his powerful energy on the drums, and Owen, you know, again with his guitar playing, and you know that solo in the song, and all that stuff. It just, and our energy as brothers together, when we started playing it live, we could feel the joy it was bringing to us, and that was transferring into the audience, and we were like, okay, we need to make sure that transfers into the production of this song. Yeah, so we're like so proud of the message of that song and how it came about, but especially then. And look, we signed a deal with Warner Music Ireland in December 2020, and I think between us, or they decided it was going to come out on March 2019, and then March 2020 it was going to come out, and of course, and there were moments where we were like, "Are people going to?" "Are people going to think I wrote this?" You know, about this, because it was so coincidental that it was written during a form of lockdown.
But it was very, there was an anthem feel to it as well. I remember Lorraine, that works with me here in the radio station, was saying that was a song that, through the darker moments of COVID, that kind of lifted her.
Oh, that it really is ridiculously humbling and wonderful to hear when people say that, because, and especially with the song, we've heard that from a lot of people, and it really did seem to connect, and it really drove us on in radio play in Ireland as well. I mean, it became a bit of a hit, and but not just that, it was just, it was a genuine, we were getting messages from people, and we put together a video then of clips that people sent us. We said, look, put the song on, and one of the videos that literally made us cry, we got this video from a hospital in Dublin, and it was all of the staff, it was loads of staff in their garb, full COVID gear, protective gear, and they were all just taking a moment out of their day in the ward to dance to the song.
Wow.
And you hear them laughing, and I was just like, oh my God, this is bigger than us. And that is, that's, even now, I'm just like, how do you process that?
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
And all you can do is say that's music, and music is amazing, and we're so lucky to be doing it as for what we do, you know. And I'm so proud of this song.
Okay, we'll have a listen to it and we'll come back and we'll chat some more. This is the second song that Cian has picked, and this is Survive.
Into the storm, maybe you were born down for something more. Baby, you could stay drifting through your day. Take the easy way, don't let it fade. Cause living a life would end in heartache, and it can smite, you cannot fade. Everyone feels the dissonance in your eyes. Nobody's got to pull the punches. This is a fight you have to take. Baby, it's a hard. You, what's the point in stronger? Maybe we could stay here just a little longer. Looking through the glass where we were safe from harm, yeah. Just like anybody else in it. Shoulda, coulda, woulda. Living a life with an empathic. And like a smart, you cannot fake. Everyone feels the dissonance in your eyes. Nobody's got to pull the punches. This is a fight you have to take. So
I love the lines, and you say, if it kills you, what's the point in stronger? I love that take, because what people always say is, well, if it doesn't kill you, it makes you stronger.
Yeah, I think I was kind of like looking at the reasoning sometimes. Maybe if you're in a negative headspace, you're like, it's almost kind of like, yeah, people will say to you, oh, what doesn't kill you make you stronger, you know, but you know, at this point of view is like, but if it kills you, and I'm kind of like, you know, but I'm kind of poking fun at that in a way, but it's also kind of saying, look, yeah, it might kill you, but, you know, come on. Yeah. is it living if you don't try?
And I also love that you got shoulda, coulda, woulda into a song. I have used that term so many times over the years. Shoulda, coulda, woulda.
And I literally, like, yeah, made sure that it, like, paused. Everything stops when it's doing that as well. And it's just, like, it's a moment. I love that moment, especially live. Yeah, I know. I'm really proud of the production on this as well. And, like, we had another guy, he's a really talented young fella, Adam Redmond, who's in a band called, he was Search Party Animal at the time, what are they called now? Oh my God, Just Wondering. But he has his own studio, so I got in with him and he did stuff, he did amazing work on it. And another friend of mine, Vin McCreath, did some work on it. But I got a few people to do their take on this song. I produced a demo and I knew it wasn't right. I knew it had the elements of what I wanted, but it wasn't. And then each of those guys kind of put their take on it. And again, like, for me, it wasn't right, but like what they were doing really inspired me and was really exciting. And then I just went, okay, how are we going to make this song work? Because it works, you know, because we played it live, which is a huge, you know, test of a song. And I just took all of the sounds they gave me, put them all into one big project. And I just started culling things that I feel weren't serving the song. And all of a sudden I ended up mixing the song accidentally myself, which I never thought I would do. And but, you know, myself, Connor and Owen were in a room and I did all that, and then we were all bopping and we're like, oh, hang on, I think we've got this here. And then again, like, my pal Philip McGee brought it to him, and he's always there helping out in the background, whether he's involved or not. He's just amazing, one of these kind of people who's like a, he's like a Rick Rubin character, just, you know, kind of benevolent genius, lovely person helping us out in the background. And he was like, yeah, that's done. He was like, what are you on about, like, you don't need to get in, you know. And, you know, he helped sculpt a few little bits and pieces here with his magical ears, you know, on EQ, but that was it, got it mastered and it was out. So just to have such a hand in the sound of it myself as well, that was a real step forward in me kind of doing more production for us and you know, going forwards.
And I guess too, because of the personal nature of the song to you and how you were feeling at that time, to have a complete hand in the mixing of it, it kind of was the natural step, wasn't it?
Yeah, but it's so funny because I never would have had the confidence or never thought I could be good enough to do that. And also, listen, it's a testament to the sound and the work, you know, Adam and Vinny and did, you know, that their sounds were incredible, you know, like the drums or whatever they put on there, or the synths and stuff. But yeah, it was a real moment of like, oh, maybe I can do this. You know, I can actually get the sound that I envisage out of my head, technically actually do it. That was magic. And as you say, because the song means so much and has ended up meaning so much to other people too, that's really special to me, you know.
And how are you feeling now? Are you okay?
Yeah, no, thank you. I think mental health is a constant thing to work on, and I'm still working on it. But I think even just having awareness around it is so important. And for me, like, music and lyric and stuff, it has to come from an honest place, I think, if I feel like it's going to connect with anybody else. And I know music I listen to connects with me because of the honesty in it. And so then I end up writing what I'm going through, and that can be scary, and scary to even talk about such personal things, because sometimes we can't even talk to our own friends or family about this stuff, and then I'm putting it out there for everybody to hear. But I don't know, for me personally, it's really important to do that though still, because I know the impact it can have, and I know the impact music has had on my life. And even if there's like one person, you know, who listens to it and goes, okay, I've taken something from this, then amazing.
Job done. Yeah. No, I agree. And
it could be a recurring theme in a lot of our tunes, actually, in all of the tunes here tonight. So apologies if there's repetition, guys.
You grew up in a house with all your family. You all played instruments and all learned together, I guess, all at different stages. How eventually did True Tides come together then? Because I know that you would have played in a different band with Killian Petit.
Yeah.
And used to jam up in Dublin Hill. By the way, Darren says hello, because he used to share a band room with him.
Yeah, Darren, legend.
And, like, that was a really good band as well. But how eventually did it come around to yourself, Connor and Owen, then forming True Tides?
Yeah, so, I mean, like, as I said, like, we've been playing together since we were kids. Owen would have been the first to play guitar in our house, so whether it be inspiration or jealousy, it forced me to pick the guitar up. So, no, definitely he would have been a big influence that way. And then, he would have been in different bands. You know, I had another band with my mates before, years ago as well, and we were all kind of doing different things, but we'd always still jam together, and we always kind of wanted to do something together. But then, as you say, you know, we'd end up in different bands and kind of, and they'd be on their own trajectories, so we wouldn't have had time to kind of, you know, get together and do our own thing. And then there just came a point where I wasn't in any bands, Connor wasn't in any bands, so the two of us kind of went, well, why don't we finally do this? I think it was over a few pints and we were like, okay, let's do this. So we started making tunes, and then we drafted in Owen and
I like Connor. That you drafted him in.
Like, you know, it was like X Factor style auditions, you know. nine to get through there. No, Owen, we always knew Owen was a phenomenal guitar player, so we were so lucky to get him in. And then actually our brother Cullum as well came in on bass, so this was a different band that we started out with kind of as brothers working together on, called Mackay.
It was kind of indie stuff, wasn't it?
Indie, and you know what, I listened back to it recently and I'm still really proud of that music. It's a lot like, yeah, indie, more dark stuff than this. And I guess I was processing some stuff myself. Like, our father passed away pretty young in 2006. He was 52 years old. I don't know if any Cork listeners will remember him as Dennis McSweeney,
the photographer. Yeah.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And you know, so, what, I'm only a year younger than your dad now when he passed away, so that is very young.
Oh my God, yeah, that's, yeah, it's just, it's so young. And look, that was a huge tragedy for our family.
So were you young then when your dad passed away, Cian?
I was very too young. and so that had a huge effect on all of us, obviously. And then I think with that would have been my first time then, like, actually writing my own songs or whatever. And so I guess I had a lot to say about that stuff. So, and it was great that way, and it was cathartic. And, but then I guess as we went out and started playing live, we realized that's not who we are as people, though. You know, we don't actually dwell on that stuff much. We obviously honor his memory and still keep him, but the darker side wasn't really us. And I think it was good to express that. But I think we realized then as people we're much kind of more upbeat, you know, in general, or we, you know, and or certainly when we get together to do music, naturally we kind of enjoy poppier music, I guess, you know, like, again, I mean, I know the Police are a guitar band, but that was amazing pop music. And we love melodic music that like that, and high energy music that kind of makes you feel good too, and it can make you think, but you know, it doesn't, you don't have to, you know. You know. Yeah. And I think that's where Hire, as I was talking earlier, when eventually we kind of came along with Hire, and I think Cullum then kind of wanted to move into a career of his own. And so then it was myself, Connor and Owen, and then we, with Hire, we became True Tides. We knew that was a change, obviously, of lineup, and also it was a change of sound, so it was really natural, and that's where True Tides started then.
You must have been, you know, I mean, you've been in so many other bands, right, and you've jammed with each other, and you even had the indie band. When you wrote that song and then True Tides became a thing, you must have known quite quickly, this is proper serious now. We could get to play to a lot of people now.
Yeah, we were very fortunate. Like, we weren't expecting it, but because you can never predict how a song, all you can do is make it as good as you can. And we were excited about it and loved the music. And that's all you can do.
Yeah.
And if people connect with it, that's amazing. And that's what you obviously you want. So you want to, you put art out because you want it to connect with people, because you want to share that feeling and keep doing it. And I think once Hire came out, it immediately got like radio play and national radio play, and it was just like, okay, yeah, this is different. It immediately felt different. And then suddenly there were more people coming to shows, and we were like, okay. And then, like I said, people like Danny O'Reilly, I started.
Yeah, how did that start, that friendship?
Well, I was
were you a fan of the Coronas?
Absolutely, yeah. Like when I was younger and into the darker stuff, you know, I was probably like, oh, the Cronas aren't cool, you know, naive. But that's more just, you know, naive jealousy, I think, you know, when as you grow up and you realize, no, their songs are amazing.
Yeah.
And I love them. And I've said this to Danny, he won't maybe say that, you know, the more I realize, like, it's just good music and just jealous kid. I was working in a coffee shop in Ratmines in Dublin because we have a studio space up there that we were lucky enough to get. And I work part time in this coffee shop to help pay the rent and stuff. And he used to come in there because he lived locally. And we just got chatting. And he's just such a good guy. And I was just telling him about my music. And he was genuinely interested, which is very rare, you know, even from musician to musician. Because, you know, there'll always be a little bit of a competitive nature, but there's always a supportive nature too within the music scene. But he was just immediately like, yeah. And listened. He was like, geez, that's really good. And eventually he gave us like a support slot with the Cronas, which was a huge leg up for us at the time in the early days of True Tides. And he was just such a champion of us, talking about us to people. And so like, and then from there on, once we started playing shows together, I got hanging out with him a bit more, and our mutual respect for each other's writing came out. And then eventually we were like, come on, let's do a session together. Or literally our very first writing session together, we wrote the song Light Me Up, which is on True Love Waits. And that actually has been played by Elton John on his Rocket Hour.
Wow.
Which completely blew my mind.
So Elton John has played a song you co-wrote. How cool is that?
Blew my absolute mind. It's just like, I have a recording of that moment. I was just like, it's incredible. I love, like, his, yeah, what a writer, you know. And even since then, like, the movie, I love the movie about him. And I love his if anybody hasn't read or listened to his audiobook, go and listen. It's Elton John, Me. It's incredibly entertaining. It's a fantastic book. And then just to know that, like, that guy, like, he apparently found the song himself, because, you know, he's such a music nerd.
Wow.
And played it. So that, like, that was amazing. Yeah, you know, so like myself and Danny are good mates now, and I always love writing with him, and he's a good friend of the band, and he's such a supporter of True Tides and has done so much for us and helped us kind of get to where we are and where we're going, you know.
Do you want to hear my Corona story?
Yes, please.
Okay. I used to play music, and I was playing in a band in Dublin called Echo, and we were playing the Sugar Club one night, and there was this other band that were the opening band of the bill called the Coronas. But they were called something, it was Corona. I don't think they were the Coronas then. I think it was just Corona. But I always remember we were there and we were like, lads, Mary Black's in the audience to watch us. And then we realised when the first band came on, we were like, ah, she's there to see them. And then we found out that the guy singing was her son. And I remember we were chatting with him afterwards and we were like, lads, you have a serious future in this industry if you manage to stay together. So that's my... I actually said it to him in the because he was on the podcast in the first season, that I can actually say I've been following them since their beginning.
Wow.
Because that was their first gig.
You really have. Yeah, that's fair.
That was their first gig. That's going back about 2005, 2004, kind of back around then.
Wow, that's class.
Yeah, yeah. They were good then too. They're all right now.
Yeah, you know, they're amazing. They're going and they're getting better and better.
And what I love is that they're now at different stages of their career around the world, but it's all, they're going to be as successful wherever they go as they're, I mean, they're gold here, but I think they're going to be gold in the States, in Europe. I just from seeing this tour, I mean, they sold out venue in Vancouver last night. I mean,
yeah, what was
that? Hats off. Amazing.
Yeah, yeah, they deserve it so much.
Anyway, your third song that you picked, Keane, is I Can't Wait. Why did you pick this one?
Again, mental guys.
No, well, the opening line, find it hard to focus because I feel I'm losing hope.
Yeah, well, I can't really hide from that one, can I, with this song? It is deeply personal. It is probably my most personal lyrics, for sure. And this was written during the pandemic. And I know a lot of people definitely suffered during that time. I know I definitely did. And it was kind of around the time I realised I needed to, like, get some help with a therapist. And, you know, anybody listening right now, absolutely, if you're going through a hard time, like, there's still somehow stigma around it in this country and around the world. I don't know how or why. I get it, though, you know, because some of the messages out there, or like, depending on the...
Social media can be horrendous for that message, that universal message that it sends.
It could be amazing, you know, because you can have people talking about it, but it's... it's a mixed bag, and social media can be very detrimental, obviously, too. But I just think, outside of all of that, just if you are struggling or if you're going through something, like, you're stronger than you think, and go, you know, absolutely go find someone to talk to. And I know it's benefited my life hugely. But yeah, I mean, yeah, these, if you read the lyrics, it pretty much says it all.
I can't wait to see the sunshine on your face, to feel the warmth of your embrace. I know what it feels like when your heart hits its limit, but I'll be there to show you how to turn around, and I can't wait.
Yeah, I was kind of half saying it to myself, but it was also kind of having, knowing that I was lucky to have people around me who care enough to ask me what's going on, and kind of, I think it's that message of, it's just literally saying to somebody, no matter what you're going through, like, reach out, and also you will feel the sunshine on your face again. You know, like, it's time, you know, it, just give it time. But also get the right help and look after each other. But yeah, I can't wait to see the sunshine on your face, to feel the warmth of your embrace. I know what it feels like. Yeah, as you read out, I mean, it says all I want to say about that, you know. And I know the verses go into the detail of it, and I kind of didn't even know what I was really fully going through. It just kind of came from the subconscious, essentially, and I think it was kind of telling me, you know.
Yeah, brilliant. It's so brave. I always say it, and I probably say it week on week in this, but I have the most admiration for songwriters, because you're ultimately putting your deepest, darkest out there. And I mean, once you've written it and recorded it, it's out there for the world to see you and to peer inside your soul. And it's a very brave thing to do.
Oh, thank you. No, I mean, I still feel incredibly vulnerable talking about it, to be honest. But
and that's okay too.
Yeah, it's a strange feeling, but at the same time, I do know, I fully stand by it and believe it, and I'm proud of that. And again, as I say, like, it's just speaking my truth and what I've gone through. And again, look, if it connects with, if there's just one person, then that's amazing. But like, regardless, even if it was just for me, amazing.
Yeah,
you know,
there you go.
But some of the most incredible moments, and really healing and good for me too, is like when we'd play it live, when we finally got to play it live, because it was released completely during lockdown. There were no shows, nothing. And then when they started to come back, to hear people sing every word of that song several times brought tears to my eyes. And I'm not a great crier. I'm not really good. I need to get better at it, because I know it's good for you. But like, it was just incredible.
There's the therapy for you, eh? People singing it back to you.
Totally. And yeah, there's the message, everybody. Write songs about your deepest, darkest moments and get people to sing it back to you. That's how you heal.
Well, we'll have a listen to it and we'll come back and chat some more.
Absolutely.
Okay, this is the third song that Kian has picked. This is the fabulous I Can't Wait.
Finding out the focus, cause I feel I'm losing hope. It's like I'm bailing a boat that's sinking on the notion of overthinking. And I realize you can save me, but can't bear to say it, cause I thought it made me stronger to weather it on my own. You say don't you worry, cause I'm always on your side. When the cards come rolling, I'll be there to show you the when your heart hits the limit. But I'll be there to show.
I love the guitar riff in the first chorus.
Yeah.
It's really a din-din-din-din kind of a thing.
Yeah. It's very, yeah, again, quite a Police-y influence in there. And yeah, this we really lent into the 80s vibes on this one. You know, Tears for Fears. But lyrically for me as well, I mean, I was just thinking as I was listening, I remember being inspired as well by writers like Carole King, you know, You've Got a Friend, or like Simon and Garfunkel, Bridge Over Troubled Waters. Songs like that, like, that kind of talk about these things where it's just like, in your darkest moments, no matter what, I'll come running to you. And it's kind of like that pre-chorus. You say, don't you worry, because I'm always on your side. When the clouds come rolling, I'll be there to show you the light. You know, it's kind of, it is that celebration too of the people who can reach out to you, you know, friends and stuff, and how important it is to be that for someone, but how important it is to know that if you ask for help, no matter how scary that is, often people will drop everything and help you out, you know.
And that line that hits it for me, no matter what the burden, you won't ever carry it alone, and don't you ever think you're on your own. And that's the thing, when you're going through those dark moments, you think you're on your own. You think that when you're only going to burden people. And the sad thing is, people who die by suicide, I always say, there was another choice. They just didn't see it. And it's so sad that they didn't see there was this other choice.
Yeah, it's absolutely heartbreaking. And it is, I don't use the word pandemic, but like it is
like a pandemic, really, isn't it?
This more, or just becoming more aware of it and removing stigmas around mental health and just talking about this stuff more. Because it's real, and just reach out, you know, and literally, no matter what's going on in your head, it's not as big as you think it is. It's not, no matter what it is.
I think we have made huge progress, though, because I'm going to share a little. Back in 2001, I lost my fiance to suicide. And at the time, it was still very much a taboo subject. People, and I remember at the time, people going, "Ah, but you can say she died another way." And I'm like, no, she suffered with her mental health. This, unfortunately, is the fallout of it. And we don't want people doing this, because if she had talked honestly, then we may not be in the situation that we're in now. But yes, it's nice that we have progressed.
We have. I agree with you. Things have gotten better.
But more to be done.
Can do so much more. And firstly, also let me say how deeply sorry I am for your loss.
Thanks, man.
For that to happen in your life, I can't imagine. I can't imagine how you can begin to process something like that. But what I do know is the power of anybody going through something to talk. But also, it can be incredibly difficult to see the wood for the trees, I think, when you're going through something too. And I think it can be so hard. And I think, therefore, the more we as a society talk about it, and the more we remove stigma, the more, like, earlier on, before people get to that point that they feel they can talk about things, and that, like, remove stigmas around issues like bipolar disorder or, you know, all these different things. Like, and thankfully we're seeing more of that awareness come about. I think with awareness comes compassion and empathy and understanding. And I think that's where we can get to the point where we can start to kind of address these things.
Because if you fall and you cut your knee, people will go, "Oh my God, you've cut your knee, it's bleeding, let's put a plaster on it and pseudocreme."
There it is, yeah.
It's no different.
It's no different, but with mental health, you can't see into someone's mind or head.
Yeah.
Well, you know, external factors can help with that, though. And yeah. I think, thank you for letting me talk about this on your podcast. And
my pleasure, man. I feel a lot about it.
For sharing your story there, because that is deeply powerful and obviously deeply emotional and a painful thing, but it's very brave of you to share, and fair play.
Respect, man. Respect. We'll move on. Before we both start getting teary-eyed with each other, because we can't give each other a hug because we're 160 miles away. Virtual hug.
Next time I'm down, I promise.
Absolutely. We'll do it over a pint.
I'll give you a hug. Can you buy hugs? I don't know.
Now, before we move on to the last song, this was, I think this went to number one when you played in the Marquee last summer.
It did. That was,
and I think it was the day that you were playing in the Marquee, because I remember watching it on Instagram.
We were backstage literally about to go on, and we got a message off our manager, and it was just like, guys, it's number one. And we're like, what? and then we walked out to 5,000 people in our hometown. Like,
what was that like? Because I mean, it's literally, you and I both come from the same area. I'm from Blackrock. You were just from up the road. So it was literally a hometown gig. So what was it like walking out in the Marquee and it's full?
It was one of the most special moments of our lives and career, and especially given that it was kind of one of our first proper gigs back as well after the pandemic. I think we'd had one or two small things, and then just come out to that, and we're like, okay, this is amazing. There's lots of people here. It's a support show. Great, it's our job to entertain them. But then to have everybody singing the words to our songs, we're like, oh my God, they know our music too. You know, like, especially after having been away from shows for so long. And then to have our song go to number one completely, like, we released this completely independently as well, because our contract with Warner was a licensing agreement. We have our own label, and we finished that up.
Okay.
And we really put everything behind this, and it just did so well. And Warner were amazing. I'm not dissing them. We're a contract, and naturally, and that was brilliant. And they're a great, great team there. And but just for it to be off our own back then was incredible. Myself, Connor, and Owen, and then get to have our two sisters, Kira and Etna, come and join us singing backing vocals, because they're such talented singers. And you know, Etna is writing music herself as well now too. So it was just a wonderful moment to experience with our family on stage. And I had a good friend of mine playing bass with us that night, who I was in college with as well, Patrick Lucy.
Is that the guy he played with you as well, with the Cork Youth Orchestra?
Yes.
In City Hall.
That's right.
Yeah, I had a good chat with him actually that night. Yeah, he's lovely.
Yeah, he's a great guy. He's a good pal. But it was just amazing. And then, yeah, that was a big night out, I'll tell you that.
I know, sure. We joined you in the venue bar later that night.
That was great.
I know you can't remember, and that shows how good a night it was. Okay, well, we have a listen. So obviously the song that we're on about is Beating Hearts. And I guess they're all the reasons why you picked this song. This is the last song, though, that Cian has picked tonight. And this is Beating Hearts.
Pressure and it falls apart. I built the structure on a hollow heart. A crowd of strangers where I lose myself. The kind of love that leaves you hanging on a shelf. But then you pull me back, then you pull me back, yeah. When I'm on the edge, I keep looking for something else. So can you pull me back, can you pull me back, yeah. I'm on the edge. Don't stop what you're doing. Keep tearing me apart. Cause I need it, no reason. It's the beating of a real life. Don't stop what you're doing. Keep tearing me apart. Cause I need it, no reason. It's the beating of a real life. Get a little obsessive, run ahead of myself. When you turn me around, I see no one else. Been looking for meaning in the theory of things. So keep kicking my ego, teaching me how to kill the disease. So keep pulling me back, keep pulling me back, yeah. When I'm on the edge, it's the
I love that song. I love the Don't Stop. It's so 80s and there's a dance move in there forever. I even gave you the dance move.
The hand goes up.
Yeah.
What a tune. And the sax at the end. Oh my God, the sax at the end playing out is... When I heard that sax at the end, I don't know, have you ever seen the film The Lost Boys? Vampire movie with...
Yes. Yeah. That's a sax moment in that, isn't there? Yeah.
That's Tina Turner's drummer, by the way, that plays the sax and sings the song on the beach. There's that beach thing where he first sees the girl star, the female girl. And there's this artist, the guy, he's got the hair in the ponytail and he's playing the sax and he's singing the song. He was Tina Turner's drummer.
Oh my God, that is so cool. I'm really watching that again.
That song, I think, obviously, that's your most recent single. So it's the progression in it, but it's real. It's the production on that is off the radar altogether.
Yeah, I mean, again, I was kind of digging more into the production, and then Philip McGee, we kind of got back in working fully with him on that one, and he's just amazing. But it was also just using our superpowers, and Phil is so good at like bringing that out in us again. But Connor's drumming is incredible on that song. Owen's guitar playing is just so funky, and
even the vocal in the first verse, it's like Visage, Fade to Grey, that kind of where there's your beautiful vocal and then there's this kind of deeper vocal behind it. It's like it could be multiple people singing.
Yeah. So like it kind of Prince vibes. Like, and also like, you know, we're using our voices so much as well because Connor and Owen are great singers and we've kind of got that blood harmony. And my sister Etna is singing backing vocals in the choir. Like we kind of made a gospel choir out of our voices, but also my sister and two of her friends as well. And we just like literally we had so much fun making that song, and I think it transfers out through the music, and like that's what we wanted out of that song. We were practically having a party in the studio, you know, and we got this incredible bass player Paul Flood on it. We just wanted it live. We wanted it real, like that real feeling, you know. And I kind of put the brass arrangements down. So I played sax on that. And then we got another brilliant trumpet player in to play as well. So we really just wanted to bring that fun carnival vibe, you know, almost Lionel Richie's, you know, all night long.
Yeah.
You know, just joy. And that's what it's about. The song is kind of a celebration. It's kind of about people who aren't afraid to question you, to look out for you, and but also to just kind of dig in and say, come here, what's going on, you know, despite unconditional, it's kind of unconditional love, isn't it?
That
kind
it's of, the beating of a real life heart, you can't beat that,
you know. And I think you know, the Beatles said it best, love is all you need. But it's true, if you can have that, if you can get that, you know, in your life one way or another, if you get it from your family or your friends or somebody, a dog. I have a wonderful dog, Zoe. Shout out, Zoe. You're my BFF. But you know, like having that in your life just keeps you going, and that you got to celebrate that, and that's what this song is for me, I think. And throw that big dirty saxophone solo at the end, and you know, you can't help but smile with that.
How do you pull that off live? Obviously, you extend the song, do you? So you
bit,
can.
Yeah. We draw it on a bit longer, and then I drop the guitar and just literally belt the sax out. So I think one day we're going to have it like drop down from the ceiling and I grab onto it and just, oh no, I've given away an idea now. Wouldn't that be a moment?
That would be class.
Yeah, and it's just that celebration. Like, and I've got that with my brothers, Connor and Owen. Being in a band, I'm so lucky to be in a band with them. Mm. I love them. You know, we kick the crap out of each other verbally. We used to kick the crap out of each other literally when we were kids. But we'd never let each other get away with anything silly, you know, in a way. Or we're always silly. But, you know, as in, you know, we'd be looking out for each other. And I think that's a wonderful
thing. Comes across. So I guess I just wanted to touch on too, I mean, being in a band with your brothers, I mean, they always say a band is like a band of brothers, but you're actually in a band with your brothers. Do you, obviously you see it as a good thing, it's a plus in a band, because you're brothers, you're not really going to fall out.
Correct, yeah, I always say when I'm asked about that, like, you know, we're going to have to be back together at Christmas and Mum won't be letting us be having rifts, you know what I mean? So... That can't happen. So we know how it is.
Because I always wonder with the Gallagher brothers, I actually think they're friends. I actually think they get on, and they've just decided to leave this draw out now in the media, because when they do announce that Oasis will do one final world tour, it'll sell out in about 3 seconds.
It'd be billions. And also, you know, sure, they, you know, it's great marketing for both their individual projects anyway, so happy days. Hopefully. I don't know. It does seem like they pretty much hate each other.
I think it does, but I don't know, do they, though? I really don't know.
Fantasy, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, they've done so much together. I think maybe they've mellowed in age.
Hopefully. Please, God.
Now, a question I ask most artists on this podcast, Cian. What's your favourite place, studio or stage?
Oh, that's... I mean, do I have to choose?
No. choose both.
It's pretty much both for me. I actually love both. I mean, maybe it's slightly pipped by live, I think. Yeah, because, no, it is. Live is just about better, really, isn't it? Because getting to see... Yeah, no, it is actually, yeah. Yeah, no, when you're playing in front of people, it's just absolutely incredible.
However, so, though, in the studio, you get to spend hours to create.
Yeah, I've been having so much fun in studio lately that I'm like, I love studio. But I'm so, like, in the moment, that's just how I'm so very, like, I don't know, I'm like a little dog or something. I'm like, oh, this is amazing. You know, in front of me, so therefore it's amazing. I love being in front of people and that incredible feeling of... when you're just having fun and you're in flow playing music and everybody's dancing and singing along and having a good time and you feed off each other's energy, there's no better thing. And studio.
And I also wanted to ask you, when you played in the City Hall with the Cork Youth Orchestra, like, they're seriously impressive kids in all that they do. So what was that like when you got, obviously you'd practice with them, right? But then you're in the auditoriums, nice full crowd, and you start and suddenly you feel them, because you're going to feel them all behind you. What was that feeling like?
It's like riding a wave. It's like as corny as that is, myself and the brothers would do a lot of surf. Well, we used to surf a lot, like, but still go surfing every summer. We're fair weather surfers now, but it's literally like catching a wave that's almost pretty much too big for you. And you're like, oh my God, and you're hanging on. And it's simultaneously terrifying and exciting, more exciting than terrifying, because, you know, it's just incredible. You get caught up in that wall of sound and just have so many musicians playing together at the same time. There's 135 of them plus us. Like, I mean, bonkers. Like, and they're so talented. And a huge credit to Moss, who's the conductor there, and all of the volunteers, all the parents and stuff who do that. Because, again, as I say, like, music is incredibly important. You know, it's been so important to me, life-changing. But even if it's just a hobby for someone, you know, or whatever.
Nice hobby.
Music is a beautiful thing, and it's just fantastic to see the kids, like, doing, you know, an orchestra is traditionally classical, but it's just brilliant then that they're taking it into, it's something I wish I did, you know, years ago when I was starting it, but, like, playing pop music or playing modern music. And again, as I say, I love classical music. Some of my favorite, like, one of my favorite pieces of all time is Jupiter, you know, the planets, Holst. That's like an incredible piece of music. But, like, doing contemporary music in that format is incredible. It's different. And, wow, you know, all those violins and cellos. And, yeah, I mean, for myself and Conor Nolan, it was just mind-blowing. And our mother, Deirdre McSweeney, used to be in a band with her brothers and sisters as well back years ago. And they supported Thin Lizzy in City Hall back in, was it the late 70s or early 80s?
Wow.
So pretty cool to be up on that stage.
What was the name of the band she was in?
They were called Coppinger Stang. They were kind of a alt-folk kind of, I think they were ahead of their time. If they released it now, they'd be like sensationally viral or whatever it is.
Wow.
But yeah, so yeah, real history there and real full circle moment for us.
Wow. That is magic. Now, the last question I want to ask you before I let you go. What's in the pipeline now for True Tides for the next 12 months? What are you up to? And will we get to see you play?
Yes, we are super excited about what we're doing at the moment. So we've been recording a lot of new music. So essentially, we're kind of working on an album, our debut album, and we're just loving it. Really digging in and pretty much self-producing again with Phil. So Phil's kind of the... exec producer or slash producer, you know, again, he's just a great with. And we're not limiting ourselves to anything, you know, like, again, Adam, that guy I spoke about earlier who worked on Survive and people like Vinny. So, like, we'll bring our friends in too, you know, who make brilliant sounds and help embellish our sound. But we're kind of keeping it just like we're investing everything of ourselves into it and loving it, you know, and we're just making sure that it's fun for us and we're just really enjoying it and really using like Owen's incredible guitar playing power and Connor's incredible drumming and the vocals and, you know, whatever I bring to it with that, and using the saxophone more, and our sisters and our family and friends, talented friends. So we just want to make the music that we're so proud of, and we really are proud of what we're doing at the moment. So how soon that's going to come out, I'm not sure. We have some songs ready to go, but we want to make sure we do it right. We have a couple of shows we've announced that we'll be supporting Ollie Murs.
That's class.
Which is incredible, and in Belfast. So, I mean, he's huge. That's amazing. So we were so delighted to get that. And there'll be another show coming up sooner. I don't think we can announce that one just yet, actually. Yeah, no.
Okay.
But keep an eye on truetidesband.com or truetidesband on all social media handles is how you'll find us there. And yeah, there's lots to come. And we might have been a little quiet on social media lately because we've been so focused on
recording. On the music.
You know, to be honest, but it's going great and we're so excited to be here.
And listen, thank you so much for coming on and for speaking so honestly, and it's been a pleasure, man. It's what I expected it was going to be and more. We grew up in the same area, we went to the same school. This was always going to work.
Of course, yeah, two local boys. I know, seriously, Pierce, it's been an absolute joy. Thank you so much and really enjoyed the chats. And it's been so nice to go back over the tunes because I don't tend to listen back to our songs too much. You know, you play them live and they're out there doing that. So it's nice to sit down and think about them again and talk about them.